Okay. So we're going to talk about how to date to get what you want. Anybody can text that wants to. But it's distracting. Okay, so I'm sorry for my lack of Spanish. If I speak too quickly or if I use a word that you don't know, please just stop me. And somebody can translate or I'll repeat myself. So, and if you understand, great, then terrific. Everybody should have a piece of paper and something to write with, because I want to make this kind of a workshop. So this is interactive. It's not going to be a lecture. I have information to share, but I really want you to share too. And some of the sharing will be done with yourself. So you won't have to share out loud, but I want to start by asking a question. What is dating? What's the point? Make it easier. What's the point of dating? What are you trying to accomplish?
I'm not sure we write it down.
No. This is for you to answer. Yeah.
No.
Yeah, why do we date?
To know the other
person. To get to know the other person? Okay. Anybody else? What is the goal of dating? To see if you're compatible? So dating really is a process, right? It's a means. So I want to talk about the goal. The goal of dating is not really to get to know the person, although that's necessary. The goal of dating is
getting married.
Thank you. But do you want to just get married or you want to have a great marriage? Right? The goal of dating is having a great marriage. So tell me some of the things that you would define as great in a marriage. What makes a great marriage?
Respect.
Loyalty.
Understanding.
Honesty.
Fun.
Friendship. Support.
Joy. Love.
Love. Good. So that's what you want, right? That's the goal of dating, is to create a marriage like that, right? So you don't want to just see if you're compatible, just see if you enjoy hanging out with each other, because that's not the goal. You might enjoy hanging out today and not enjoy it so much tomorrow, or not enjoy it so much once you have a couple of kids. What if you have one kid and then twins and then twins? Then life could be hard, right? I know somebody who went 7 years with no children, and then within 4 years she had 5 children.
Wow.
So she had one, then two. So, or Lolena, when somebody loses a parent, or Lolena, a sibling, things can get very hard. You know, and it could be a year of difficult times, a year of depression, or when somebody loses a job, you know, the different hard things happen when you move to a different country for whatever reason. So there are challenges that come up in a marriage. You want to make sure that you're married to somebody who can help you handle the challenges and who you're willing to help him handle those challenges. So there will be differences, for sure. So it's not how few differences could you find somebody with very few differences, it's how well do you handle the differences. So in dating, you're dating for a great marriage. So let's talk about how you can date to have a great marriage. Let's start. As I was flying here, I saw this ad in the Airplane magazine, which I'll read to you. Okay, so I thought at first it was an article. I saw it over somebody's shoulder. But it's an ad for a dating service. Navigating today's complex dating scene can be daunting, and busy professionals often wonder who to turn for advice. We sat down with It's Just Lunch dating expert PJ Osgood to discuss the difficulties for dating for singles on the go. Here is some of the savvy advice she gives her clients. So the first one is, maybe it's time to outsource your dating. So I was thinking, who am I talking to here in Mexico? So is your mother going to take care of some of your dating, or are you? Are you outsourcing it? Are you going to bring it to somebody else to find somebody, or are you finding it? So in this room, out of everybody here, just so I know, who do you expect to find your husband for you? You? Raise your hands. Or your mother? You. So most of the people in this room expect it to be themselves, right? some people aren't quite sure, right? But most of you expect that it's going to be you. So likely you're not outsourcing at this point, right? Outsourcing means sending the job to somebody else, but to find a matchmaking service. So this is a non-Jewish secular matchmaking service. But it's interesting just to see some of the things that they talk about. So what's the biggest don't on a first date they have here? The biggest don't, right? The biggest one is talking about an ex. Don't talk about your old boyfriends, okay? That's the biggest don't. That's the biggest one. And on here, secular, I'm not saying for us, I'm just saying, just see what's going on out there, right? The second biggest don't is using your cell phone to talk or text when you're on a date, right? So dating means being present, actually being available to the person. That's the second biggest don't. The third one, which is much smaller, is not making eye contact. And then name dropping or talking about your business or career for first dates. Those are the biggest don'ts, right? So then it says, what are the best conversations for a first date? Hobbies or interests, that's the best. Then comes travel, then comes family, then comes movies, then comes food. So I just thought it was interesting just for this. And she talks about how to find a date. But what is this? This is a dating service for people who want to get married, right? It's not just how to find a date, it's how to find a partner. And what they do is try to train you in thinking tachlis. Do you know the word tachlis, right? So in thinking tachlis, in thinking about, move in a little bit. Tachlis means the essence, tachlit in Sephardic and tachlis in Ashkenazis, right? So tachlit, it means the essence of the thing, to really date for a real purpose, right? So you could date just for fun. And people do date just for fun, you know, from depending on the culture that you come from like 14 till 20 or even early 20s, people date for fun. And then they decide they want to get married at some point in America, let's say 30, right? So first they decide they want to have a kid, and then they decide they have to find somebody to have a kid with. That's kind of how it works in the secular world in America, right? So they get married usually around 30 in order to have a child. Or they got pregnant, so they might as well get married. So that's how it works in the secular world, right? In the Jewish world, that's not how it works. In the right-wing Jewish world, hopefully you're dating for marriage, and you're dating much earlier. But in a world where you're dating for yourself and trying to find your own partner, so then you have to know, first of all, what are you looking for? So you're not looking for somebody that it's just fun to hang out with. So let's start by talking about the essence of what. So why do you start dating at 14, 16, 18? What's the point of that? If you're not ready to get married then, what is the attraction to dating younger?
Hormones.
Excellent. It is hormones. So there's inside of us, there is a need to connect. We have a very strong need to connect, and that need manifests in many different places. But it starts out when those hormones kick in. Younger children can connect very nicely with parents and teachers and siblings, but as soon as those hormones kick in, there really is a need to connect with something deeper and really to connect with the purpose in your life. So a marriage can help fulfill a purpose in one's life, help bring one to a place where they're capable of it, but it is a yearning that starts around 14, 15, the yearning to get married. For girls, it actually starts around age 4. Right? And they start thinking about the pretty dress and all that stuff. But for real, it starts around 14. They really do want to connect. So that need to connect is very strong. So what happens usually in the earlier years, and almost always in most relationships, is a period of infatuation. What's the difference between infatuation and love?
I think infatuation is something more physical. You want to be connected, like, not physical, but to touch somebody else, but you're like involved with feelings and the idea, like television, like TV or movies, and that's not the real life.
Excellent. So infatuation is based on an image and not on truth.
An illusion.
Right? An illusion. Infatuation is based on illusion. So you can test sometimes, is this infatuation or is this love, by seeing what happens when I get to know them better. Some people don't want to get to know somebody better because the chemistry is so great. They realize that if they get to know them better, the chemistry might evaporate. That's a sure sign that it's infatuation. However, one of the things that infatuation does is release extra hormones into your bloodstream. And those hormones actually turn off your ability to think clearly. Physically turn it off. So we'll talk about how to deal with some of that, but that is something that you need to know. Infatuation can wash away the ability to focus. Certainly, if you become engaged physically, it can also, then oxytocin is released. It's a second hormone. Oxytocin is called the cuddle hormone. It's the hormone that comes out when you cuddle. So it's a hormone that's released when a mother nurses a baby. It's a hormone that's released in sexual encounters. But it's a hormone that's released, you don't even have to have a full-blown sexual encounter. A long hug or holding hands while you're walking. Or if you have had a hug or you have held hands and now you're just walking, or you just see him walk across the room, your body can release oxytocin. Oxytocin makes you feel good. It triggers the pleasure centers in your brain and it turns off critical thinking, which is great if you want to be in a relationship with that person. And not so good if you haven't yet decided. So don't let oxytocin be a decider for you. It's there for a reason. You need oxytocin to turn off critical thinking. When you're in a relationship with somebody that you've clearly decided you want to be in that relationship, there's enough that you'd rather not see that you could use the oxytocin for. But not in the first stages when you're dating for a fabulous marriage, right? Because then you could be stuck with a mediocre marriage because you weren't able to see clearly. Nobody wants a mediocre marriage and nobody wants a bad marriage. Mediocre, you know what that means, right? Right? Nobody wants mediocre and nobody for sure wants bad. Everybody wants great. So it's really important to keep in mind, I am dating for a fabulous marriage. And have that as a goal. You might even want to write it down. You might want to write down what your definition of a fabulous marriage is. You don't have to do that now, but you might want to do that at some point so that you know what your goal is. Keep your goal in mind.
How's it, man?
Come on in. Take a piece of paper, where'd the paper go, and a pen, because there's going to be an exercise to write very soon. Do we have more chairs? Do we have enough? Okay, ready? Okay, so infatuation can feel like love. It's a very heady feeling. It's a very exciting feeling. It usually comes right away. It hits you fast and heavy. So if something hits you fast and hard right away, that should send up your antennas. Is this infatuation or is this the beginning of love? Infatuation is a necessary stage in developing love, for sure. But the way to see infatuation and love work together is sort of like building a campfire. Has anybody ever built a fire? No?
Yeah.
Yeah? So the way you build a fire is first paper, then twigs, then little sticks, then big sticks, then logs, right? If you don't have any logs or big sticks, let's say, you just have paper and twigs, how long will the fire last? Not long, but it will be strong, right? It lights easily and it goes fast and heavy and strong and done. What happens if you just put in logs and you try to light a log? It never will light, right? So you need infatuation to start things. But then you need real fuel to keep it going, right? Something that's genuine to keep it going. And it turns out a fire is a lot like a marriage, right? It could burn you, but you want it to warm you, not burn you, right? And in order for it to warm you and not burn you and to keep going, you need to tend to it. So you need good boundaries around it, and you need to tend to it, constantly adding fuel to it so that it doesn't burn out, because it could. Right? That's a different talk. When you talk to your college teachers, you'll talk about keeping marriage forever. But now we're talking about dating, how to get what you want. But just to have that in mind, you need infatuation. It shouldn't all be infatuation. Infatuation can burn very hot and heavy, but it's not a lasting thing. How long can it last, though? It's not quite like kindling. Because it could be short. It could be just until you see the guy across the room, you go over and say, hi. And he opens his mouth and you say, ew, infatuation is over, right? That could be. Or it could last a few months up to about 3 years. So sometimes people get married during the infatuation period, especially people who are really seriously looking to get married, and it turns out that divorces usually peak around 3 years. So, and you see a precipitous drop, a strong drop in divorces after about 4 years. So it's in that early period of infatuation, if it doesn't turn into a real founded love, that things can fall apart. Why is that? What are you really looking for? So yes, you're looking for compatibility, but I want you to draw on your paper three concentric circles. So first a big circle, inside it another circle, inside that another circle. You don't have to draw it that big, just so that you can write one word inside each circle. And you can write more if you want. If you draw it big, you can put in a lot. Okay, the inner circle, inside the inner circle, write values. Inside the second circle, write goals. Of course, you can write these words in Spanish if you choose. Values. How do you say values? Okay. Values. And then a circle around values, that's goals. And a circle around goals, that's interests. Values, goals, interests. The outside of you is your interests, right? The part that you often present to the world, right? Whatever you like to do. How you do your hair, it shows something about you. What you wear, bless you.
Thank you.
Shows something about you. What you drive shows something about you. The way you wear your jewelry shows something about you. What you read shows something about you. But those are your interests. Those interests may represent something deeper, but they might not. If somebody's reading the seven highly effective habits of the seven habits of highly effective people, what does that show about them? Their interest in what? It's not literature. That book is not literature. That's personal growth. Well, no, but that's personal growth. That book, so that would show an interest in personal growth, which might be tied into a goal. Maybe they want to be a leader or a manager of a company and they're trying to figure people out, right? So that might be a goal. It might be tied into a value of personal growth as a concept, but it might not. So it's hard to know when you see them reading that. Let's say you see reading somebody's reading The Help. Right? Are you familiar with that book that's out right now? It's about the help in the South. Might be interesting as a Mexican to read a book about the interaction between blacks and whites in the southern United States in the 1960s and how people treated their help. Yeah, there's a movie about it now. Mm-hmm. So that might show an interest in literature.
History.
It might show an interest in history. It might show an interest in social justice. It might show an interest in racial relations. There's a lot of things it might show, which all might point to goals or values, but it might not. It might just be interest, right?
Or homework.
It might be homework, right? So a lot of people date based in interests. And when they seek compatibility, they often seek compatibility and interest. We like the same food, we like the same music, we like the same movies, and it's so much we like to rock climb, we like to hike, we like to travel. That's all interests, right? But you need to get deeper than that because interests do not hold a relationship together. Interest can be a little spice on a relationship, but that's not what holds it together. Goals either. It's really the values and the confluence in values that holds a relationship together. You might not even share a goal. You might not share any interests. But if you share values, it can work. If you share tons of interests, but no values, there's no way it can work a long time. Not possible.
But what do you mean by values?
Good. Excellent question. That's the very next thing we're going to discuss. We're going to now, this is why you have a piece of paper, we're going to now try to identify some of your core values. This is between you and yourself. Nobody's looking at your paper. Nobody's checking it. This is for you to think about. I'm going to read you a short list of possible values. There's more. This is just to get you thinking. And then I'm going to ask you some questions. You might want to write down a few that really speak to you as I'm reading. That's up to you, and I can read it again if you want, but it's just to get you thinking. You'll be able to think of your own values, but I will ask you questions that you'll answer in writing to help you think about it. So here are some possible values: loyalty, integrity or honesty, hard work and discipline, compassion, frugality, that means not spending too much money, dealing with what you have, justice, care for the environment, devotion, excellence, gratitude, hospitality, peace, religious commitment, family values or family, perseverance, optimism, changing the world, tradition, volunteering, privacy, community involvement, drive, drive means ambition, strong ambition, kindness, or giving. There's more values than that. That's just a short list to get you thinking. Okay, now here are some questions for you to help you get in touch with your own values, because you might not be able to make a list right now. You might have already an understanding of what your key values are, but you really want to distill it down to about five. You'll have a longer list. Of course, you could probably list 20 things that are very important to you. But to try to think about your top five, your top five. What are the three most important values you would want to give to your children? And of course, there's a lot, but for this, you only get to pick three. The three most important things you want to make sure your children get from you. Okay, you just inherited $10 million, but it's only for tzedakah. You have to give it all away, every penny. Where will you give that $10 million and why? You could divide it up if you want. It doesn't have to be to one place. But why are you giving your $10 million to those places? What are the choices that you make and why? That's also for writing. You can just think about it if you want, but where will you give $10 million and why did you make those choices? Who are three of your top role models? Three people you admire so much that you'd like to grow into somebody like that. You want to be like them. Three of them. What qualities do they have that you really appreciate? You want some more time for this one? Mm-hmm. Yeah? Three top role models, three people that you admire very much, and what are the qualities? Is there a theme among them? Is there something that they share that you like very much? Or do they all embody different things that you like, that you'd like to strive towards? Okay, after 120 long, happy, and healthy years, what would you like said at your funeral? Mm-hmm. Somebody's standing there talking about you, and they say what? What do you want them to say? Mm-hmm. right? Imagine grandchildren and great-grandchildren getting up and saying, my grandmother was always so... what? She used to always... what? What do you want to be remembered about you? That's an exercise you could actually take quite a bit of time doing. Mm-hmm. But it's really something to think about. It helps you get in touch with who you really want to be. And finally, for right now, list the 5 areas that you currently invest the majority of your time and your money. Right now, what do you spend the most money on? What do you spend the most time doing right now in your life? And why? Even if you're a student right now, you could say student. Even if you're a reluctant student, you might say, why? Because I respect my parents. They want me to. That could be a reason that you're doing something. Or it could be the quest for knowledge. Or it could be the desire. There's all kinds of different reasons why you're doing what you're doing. So why are you, what are you doing? And why are you doing it? Hopefully, with some of these questions being answered, you might be able to make those circles and fill in some of them. Your core values, what's so important to you, what you would not be you without, right? What's very important to you. You might, at this point, have some strong goals, whether it's finishing school, whether it's starting a career, whether it's getting married, whether it's purchasing something, a house, a car, whatever it is, traveling around the world, going to India, going to Israel. Pick your goals, but you could probably fill in a few goals there. You might have big goals. You want to be the president. Has there ever been a female president of Mexico? Not yet. Could be you. So.
Not anymore.
I heard elections are coming up soon. You never know. But whatever your goals are, you might want to put them. And then it's easy to list some interests. That's easy to get in touch with. But it's sometimes a little harder to get in touch with the actual values. When you're in touch with your values, and it's important to know what yours are, then you can start to seek somebody who shares your values. Because that's really what a lasting marriage is built on. Is sharing values. You might want to share some goals too. And it's certainly pleasant, but extra if you share interests. But interests are the extra, that's frosting on the cake. You really want cake and you want it to be whole wheat nutritious cake, right? So that you won't get tired of eating it very fast. So you want a healthy cake. So here are some questions to ask very early in your dating process if you're dating to get what you want. If what you want in dating is just fun, skip these questions. But if you're dating for a fabulous marriage, these are important questions. So this is based on a New York Times article. It's not all. They had 15 questions, but these are the major areas of this article. Questions that people wish they had asked their spouse before they got married. Okay, that's how it's worded. So these are questions you, not yet being married, most of you, could ask, or if you have friends who aren't married, could ask before you get married to make sure it's worth it, to make the lifetime commitment to this person. No, fortunately in Judaism we have divorce, there is such a thing. Catholics don't have that. So when my husband was 17, he worked in a liquor warehouse for the summer, schlepping boxes with all Catholic guys. So one day, one of the older, they were all older than him, he was underage, it was really illegal, but his father was a vice president, he got the job. So he's with all these Italian guys, schlepping boxes, And one of the guys comes in one morning and says, "Guess what? I'm getting married." And everybody says, "Who are you marrying?" He says, "Oh, such a nice girl. I love her." He says, "What? You love her?" He says, "What are you marrying for love for? You should marry one of your father's paisano's daughters, one of your father's best friend's daughters." He said, "Don't marry for love. First you love a her, then she loves a you. Then you don't love a huh, and she don't love a you. And then you have to get a gun or a divorce or something." So for Catholics, you do have to get a gun first, a divorce second, because there's no divorce allowed. For Jews, there's divorce allowed. And we actually learn about divorce in the Talmud when we're learning different subjects. Divorce comes before marriage. Why? You have to know that there's a way out before you step in, which means that every day you're in is because you chose it, right?
Yeah, but nowadays people tend to think, "Oh yes, I can get divorced by me." They don't try.
That's correct.
Either.
That's correct. So you have to know that there is a possibility, which makes the marriage a choice every day, but then you have to choose it every day.
Okay.
Right? You do. And so that's part of the questions that you want to ask. So here are some of the questions. I'll ask the last one first, right? What is your commitment to the marriage bond? How do you feel about marriage? Is marriage, we'll try it and see? Or you want to ask, though, if for you marriage is not, we'll try it and we'll see, you have to make sure you marry somebody who feels the same way.
Yes.
That's what I'm saying. So it's a real question to ask. Don't just assume that somebody shares your values, because they might not. You might feel like marriage is a commitment for life. If it's life-threatening, if you're in so much pain that you don't feel like you could stay alive, you might consider divorce, but otherwise, you're going to work through it. You are committed to this. You want to make sure that you marry somebody who feels the same. If you're marrying somebody who feels like, you know, it's lots of fun to be with you, and I'll be with you as long as it's fun.
Yes.
This is not who you want to marry, right? But if you feel that way, you might not want to marry who feels like they're committed for life, because you might feel trapped by that thought. So you want to identify your value in marriage and make sure that you marry somebody similarly. So this is a question to ask, not on the first date, but certainly by the fifth or sixth or seventh, it's time to actually talk tachlis. It's important to have a conversation like this very early in the relationship, or if you happen to be dating in more of a shidduch type of a dating situation, or if a friend is introducing you, you might have a short list of questions that you give to your friend to ask him first before you meet. Just a short list to make sure it's worth it. Because then, I mean, it's interesting, what this article says is, we do all the background checks, so all you have to do is see if there's chemistry. And that really is the traditional Jewish way of dating. The parents do all the background checks, so all the kids have to do is see if there's chemistry. That's why you can get married after 3, 7, 8 dates, whatever it is. You don't need much, because your parents already checked each other out. Both parents will be happy if this works, right? So all the kids have to do is meet and see if they like each other. But the values have already been checked out. And hopefully, if the parents have done well, sometimes parents make mistakes, and sometimes there's still chemistry. But really, you want to make sure there's shared values, some shared goals, and then all the kids have to do is see if they like each other. That's it. And that can grow into something. So first of all, you have to see, what is the commitment to the marriage bond? Question number 8 or 1 here. 2, bringing up children. What do you think that will be like? It's worth it to talk about it. You have a life experience with raising children. He has a life experience with raising children. What are your thoughts and expectations? Maybe you had a very involved father, and so you absolutely expect the father of your children to be very involved. He's going to get up at night and help with the kids. He's going to play baseball with them on the weekends. He's going to take them to shul. Whatever it is, you have a picture. You want to see if it's a similar picture. Maybe you had a very distant father, and you're thinking, "I definitely do not want distant for my children. I want to make sure I marry a man who's involved with the child rearing." Or maybe you had a distant father and you think, "Distant father is fine. Who cares if he's involved? I really run the show and I want to make sure it's my show to run. I'd rather have a man who's kind of out of the house most of the time." But you need to ask, right? Because people have very different visions of what it's like to raise children. Financial obligations or goals and patterns of spending and saving money. Some people make a lot of money, but they do not spend it, and they feel it should not be spent. And if you're used to spending a lot, making a lot, and spending a lot, you may be very shocked when you marry somebody who makes a lot and cannot spend it. That's something to ask. How does it work, spending and saving? What are expectations? How do you feel about going into debt? Some people feel very strongly about never going into debt, even for a car, only for a house, as usually a house can't be bought in cash. But some people won't go into debt for anything else. And some people feel like, whatever, I'll buy it now, I'll pay for it later, whenever I can, you know, we'll handle it. So that's something to talk about. Just how do you both feel about it? So there's compatibility there. That's a very common place of clash in marriages, is handling money. Very common. Four, since we started with one. How the household will be run. So in general, who does what tasks, right? Is it a traditional, the woman's in charge of the house, the man's in charge of the money kind of household? Is it a partnership kind of household? Well, you're both kind of in charge of both. You want to just know what is your plan? Who's going to be in charge of what? Doesn't mean you're committing to it in the conversation, but you want to know the general thought about what you have in mind and what he has in mind, to know if there's compatibility there. Oh, sorry. I can read them again. Right, the first one was commitment to the marriage bond. Second one is bringing up children. The third one was financial obligations and goals, or how you deal with money and spending and saving. The fourth one is how the household will be run. The fifth one is how much religious education will you want for the children? Because really how much, it's a two-part question, I wrote them backwards. Really it should be first, your spiritual beliefs and needs. What are your needs? Now a lot of times when people get married in their early 20s, or even today, I don't know what it's like in Mexico, but in the United States, there's a new vocabulary word. It's called emerging adults. So a new word for the 20th century was teenager. It didn't exist before. Before, in the 1800s, people went from kid to adult, right? So by the time you're 10, 11, 12, 13, depending on who you are, you were first a child, then maybe you got apprenticed to somebody, and then you're married at 14, 15, you're an adult, right? Or at least you're on your own, you were capable, you're an adult. There was no in-between stage, in between childhood and adulthood. That was a new thing of the last century, where there's actually enough money to allow children to not to have to contribute so much, right? We didn't need farmhands out of our children, unlike in the 1800s and before, where every single pair of muscles was necessary to run the family. Nobody got to slack off and play on the computer while somebody else was working, right? Everybody had to pitch in. So last century, teenager. This century, emerging adult. What is that? Emerging adult is somebody from about 18 to 30. They're not considered adults until they reach certain milestones. What are those milestones? Marriage, financial independence, end of education, right? So those three things today don't usually happen. Full adulthood, financial independence, marriage, and completion of education is usually delayed until around 30. All those things together. So that period between 18, end of teenagerness, until adult, full adulthood is now called emerging adult. So we've really pushed off adulthood further, partly because we are in an information age and education does take so much longer, but partly, here's another vocabulary word for you, partly because we're currently afflicted with affluenza. Influenza is the flu, right? Affluenza comes from the word affluent. We're very affluent. We have a lot of money. Even poor people have a lot of money today. We're affluent. So it means that people can get what they want without having to save for it. They can either put it on a credit card and pay for it later, or they have enough money, they can just buy it. Which kid has to really work hard to save something or to learn how to mend a hole and wear a sweater that has a hole? You know, who does that today? We get little pills on our sweater, right away it goes in the giveaway bag. Nobody wants to even like shave them off. You know, they used to sell razors for sweaters. So so that you could shave off the pills on the sweater and it would refresh it and it would look new and new. Who does that today? You know, very few people take care of their clothing or think of their clothing as an investment that they're going to have for a long time. So easy to buy, so easy to get, so easy to acquire. So we've now created a situation in which it's easy to replace things, and we think about that with people too. It's easy to replace them. We don't really have a concept of investing. So affluenza is something that's affecting us as a society, and that has pushed off adulthood, because part of adulthood is the ability to achieve for yourself. And if everything's given to you and you haven't yet exercised achieving for yourself, you're not a full adult until you get there. So 30-ish. Okay, so the question is then, that's what I was going to say, is during that time period, it used to just be in the early 20s, late teens, but it's really up until adulthood, religious commitment is often very low. So usually people get married at a time in their life when their own personal religious commitment and their spouse's personal religious commitment is at its lowest place. So it's actually a risky time to get married, because, and that's when intermarriages can happen, or religious and less religious or non-religious marriages can happen, because it's not so recognizable how important being religious is to a person. But once a baby comes, let's say, God forbid, in a mixed marriage, but I've heard it across the country, right? So she wants a bris and he wants a baptism. And he's thinking, you know, a bris? I mean, I said okay when we got married, but should somebody really be cutting my child there? You know? And she's thinking, a baptism, it sounded okay when I was thinking it's just water sprinkled on their head, but you have to go into a church for that, and a minister does that, and do I really want a minister sprinkling water on my baby's head? Right? So they don't care when they're 22, but they really care when they're 30. So it's something to think about. How important is your own spirituality? And think about it as a mother. Just fast forward. What will it be like for you? What do you want your home to look like? And what do they want their home to look like? And then how do you want to educate your children? What schools are you thinking about sending them to? Not that you're picking a school. You're picking a type of school, right? So he might want public school. You might want Jewish school. He might want Jewish school but not religious. You might want Jewish school but yes, religious. You need to talk about that beforehand. It makes a difference, right? And that could lead, doesn't mean it's you shouldn't get married if you can't agree, but it does mean you need to know this is something that needs to be worked on. Okay, number 7, boundaries with in-laws. Talking about how you think you're going to interact with the other person's family. Are they going to be an important part of your life? Or not? Are you going to be, do you expect that every Shabbos you're going to your family for the next decade or two until it's time for you to host your daughter coming to your house? Is that what you expect? Or is he expecting that you're going to go to his family? Or is he expecting that you're going to be your own family? Right? So that's something to think about. Where, how much influence will the in-laws have? How much do you expect them to pay for, to do for you, to give to you? How much are you expected to give to them? Looking at them now and in their mid-40s, which is probably the age that most of your future in-laws will be right now, are right now, you might think, oh, whatever, they're whatever. But think about them at 70. They might be moving into your home. You might be taking care of them for the last 10 years of their life. It's something to think about. Right. It's something to think about. What? Hopefully you have a few decades of a good relationship before you do that, but that's something that can happen. Yes. So what are some expectations that you have around in-laws? And finally, it's also important to discuss where you want to live and why you want to live there. Is it Mexico? Is it the States? Is it Israel? What? Where do you want to live? And why? What's your expectation? Some people are very clear. They want to make Aliyah, and they're not marrying anybody who doesn't want to live in Israel. Some people really, really want to live there, but depending on other factors, they're willing to not. Some people feel very clearly they absolutely, not just they want to live in Mexico, not just Mexico City, but it has to be Polanco because they have to live next to their parents. And that's all there is to it, right? And they're not planning on living anywhere else. So that needs to be discussed. Right? Where do, not that you are deciding right now, but just to hear, what might it be like? What is he thinking? What are you thinking? Does that have to be flipped? I could do that, I think, if I can figure it out. We just open it up. Okay. Okay. All right, so now you've heard some questions that you should be talking about with the person that you're dating early on in your relationship, if you're dating for a fabulous marriage. These are definitely things that need to be thought about. So thinking about yourself, and then thinking about him, and thinking about how you blend on the core value issues, what's important there. So now, here are some questions for you to consider about the other person. Right, so now let's imagine you're dating somebody that you like a lot. Right? Now, let's even imagine that you've checked out some of the values and they go, right? So let's imagine you got that far. So now, here are some questions for you. Well, the first one is really, do we share values? You're dating somebody you enjoy. Do we share values? So in order to answer that, you need to know yours and you need to figure out what his are. You might want to go through some of these questions with him. Here's your infatuation checker. Two, actually, infatuation checkers. One is, am I dating him? Or am I dating an image? Am I dating what I think he can be? He's gonna be so amazing when he gets that job. He's gonna be so fabulous after he graduates. He's, you know, he's working out now, and when he loses that weight, he's gonna be stunning, right? Are you dating who he is? Or are you dating what you're excited about him to be? Or maybe there's an image of what he is right now. Maybe he's, my grandmother, my maternal grandmother, my mother's mother, was a college professor, and she married one of her students. She was 36 and he was 22, wow. Right? So that could be okay, and for them it worked out great. But it could not be okay too, right? It could be that the college student is looking at the professor thinking, wow, I want a career in that, and if I marry that one, I'm for sure getting it, right? That's really dating an image, it's not dating a person. That's dating what they have, not who they are. That's one of the things that we think about. Under the chuppah, there is a tradition to take off all jewelry. A little too late at that time, but it's just a symbolic gesture to say, I'm marrying who you are, not what you have, not the jewelry. I don't want to be blinded by the jewelry. While I'm making this commitment to you, it's not about what you have. It's about who you are. Hopefully you've thought about that beforehand, but it is symbolic under the chuppah. That's why we take off the jewelry. Yeah. Okay, here's another infatuation checker. Faults. Can you see his faults? He for sure has them. If you can't see faults, make sure you find some. Ask somebody else who can see them. Because if you can't see them, you're blind. Everybody has faults. Everybody has faults. Everybody does. It's important to be able to be honest about your own faults. And honest about his. You need to be able to see them. If you can easily brush them away, oh, it doesn't matter. Whatever are his faults, he's so great, I can handle anything. That's infatuation talking. If you can see his faults and say, wow, those are some really hard things to live with, but he has so many good qualities, I think I am willing to make the commitment to live with those flaws and to understand them now, but then make a commitment to focusing on the good parts of him and know that those faults will come up and be annoying in marriage, but I'm making the commitment to handle them. That's a budding love talking. That's a different thing. But if you can't see them or if you can just brush them off so easily, that's a very risky thing. So, and then your own faults too. It's important to be honest about your own faults. Some people expect too high when they're dating because they don't recognize their own faults. So some people need to be more in touch with who they are, actually, and be able to date somebody who's on their level. So it's important to be true about what your level is so you can seek somebody compatible to you. Okay, now another question to ask about your relationship that you have now, or the relationship that once you're in it, do we have healthy boundaries? What does that mean? We do talk about marriage, two people blending into one. But it has to start out with two people, not one person who's invisible and one person who's dominant, and that person becoming the shadow of the other, or just disappearing into the other. That's not becoming one. It is becoming one, but not in a healthy way. And that's not something that can last either. It's a common trap for many young wives to totally annul themselves in the presence of their husbands. And that is not a setup for a healthy marriage. You have to know who you are and have your own sense of self and presence, your values, your goals, your directions, the way you do things. And with that, bring that to the marriage. He also has to have a healthy sense of self and bring that to the marriage. And then the two of you weave that together, not sweep things away. But it's about knitting the two of you together. So that's healthy boundaries, understanding that you both have differences and they need to be blended, but not sweeping away something vital to another person. It doesn't mean that you don't give up vital things. You know, it could be that in one of your earlier conversations, you both agreed Mexico Polanco is the place for you. And then he wanted to be a doctor, right? And he happens to be really good at it. You married him in school. Now he's been offered a top position as a surgeon in France. But it's such a good position. How could you not give it up? Even though living next to your mother is so important, it's not negating yourself. That's recognizing with who you are, I'm willing to let this go for the importance of who he is. But not, I don't care. I don't have to be anybody. We don't have to recognize who I am. We'll just do what you want. That's unhealthy boundaries. But recognizing that you want to give to him the value that you have of living close to your home in order that he should be able to have that opportunity of a lifetime, that's a different kind of giving. So that's still within healthy boundaries. It's too long a conversation and I'm ill-equipped to have it, but discussing codependency and dependency and independence is also important within the healthy boundary area. So I can't really go there. You'll have to do some reading on your own. But you certainly don't want to be involved in a codependent relationship in which somebody has a fault and needs you to support them in that. That's codependency. They're dependent on you. You're dependent on them, too, to have that fault. Sometimes people who have drug addictions have, let's say it's a man who's addicted, whatever. I knew of somebody, unfortunately, in our neighborhood. I discovered this because he was stealing drugs from our cabinet. And I knew that he drank a lot. I couldn't figure out why he was stealing stimulants from us, because stimulants don't make you high, right? But I have some kids with ADD, take stimulants. I had stimulants, they're prescription, you can't easily get them. Why was he stealing that? But I saw it was more than once. He would pretend he was looking for tea and he'd be in the medicine cabinet taking. I mentioned it to somebody and they said, oh, somebody who drinks a lot but who works hard in business needs a stimulant to keep them awake while they're drunk so they can work. Right? Now, it turned out that person eventually had to go to drug rehab, but it turns out that there was a woman, I won't say, but there was a woman in his life who needed that addiction because she felt so needed when he needed her. That's a codependency. That's somebody who can't necessarily help you get off, but can create, not on purpose, but can create a situation in which that stays instead of gets cured. So that's an extreme example. I told you an extreme example because sometimes it's easier to see it in the extreme and then you can see it more subtly. But you want to make sure you're not in a codependent relationship for sure. It's important to listen to what people who are close to you are saying. Because once that oxytocin starts flowing, and it does flow before marriage, it's not easy to see what's going on, really. But other people who don't have that oxytocin, your mother, your sister, your best friend, a teacher, they can see. It's important to ask them. Sometimes people don't want to share. Especially as you get a little bit older, into your 20s, people feel like, you know what, you know what you're doing. It's your business, it's your life. And if you're going to marry him, whatever, you can decide that. And they don't want to start up with you. But the truth is, you should ask them, what do you think about Bob? Do you think he's good for me? Do you think I'm good for him? Invite their comments. Just making up a name, right? I was going to say Juan, but Juan's not a Jewish name, right?
Juan.
It's not a Jewish name, right? So Mexican name, but Juan, not a Jewish name. My daughter-in-law hired a contractor named Juan. She wrote it in her phone, W-O-N. I was like, that's not. And I said, who is that? She said, that's Juan. Right. So anyway, ask the people who are close to you what they think of. They see you together. They see your energy level. They know you well. Ask them what they think. Ask them to reflect back to you what they think this is. Is this a good and healthy relationship? Do they feel like you can grow in it? Do you feel like you can help them, the other person, grow? Or do they feel like this is not so healthy? Sometimes people can see things that you can't see. And sometimes they won't share it with you unless you ask. So ask them what they think. Then ask yourself about respect. Do you respect him? Does he respect you? Is that respect mutual? You need the respect to go both ways. If you don't feel respected, that's a red flag. It's very important to be respected and to feel respect. Then, and though this sounds strange, both of these two things, well, let's start with this one. The second one sounds stranger. This one's not, because you would think if you're getting married, this should be there, but you need to ask it anyway. Do you have open and honest communication? Do you trust what he says? Does he trust what you say? Can you talk to him about anything? So that's an important question. And here's the one that sounds really strange, but it's interesting to see. How well do you get along? That's also an infatuation test, because sometimes you don't get along well, but you're still crazy about him. Sometimes that's because people are drama-holics. They love drama. They feed off of it. The same child that started fights all the time as a child just because they love to be in that high-intensity environment, they can do that with their mate. Sometimes it works for them. They both need that high intensity, and they get it by fighting. As long as you recognize that's what you're doing, it can be uncomfortable for the people around you, but that might work in your relationship. But you need to ask the question, do we get along? Do I actually enjoy being with this person? Or am I infatuated, or I like other things, but it just isn't working? We're just not getting along. And it might even be that you share core values, you share goals, you share interests, you agree how a household should run, you agree where you should live, and you just can't get along. That's a possibility. It happens. Even if you love somebody, you might not get along with them. But that's not a relationship. You might not want to make that relationship permanent. But it's something to ask about. And finally, oh, not finally, there's two more. Do they bring out the best in you? And can you bring out the best in them? And the last question is, if they stay exactly like they are right now, do you still want to get married?
Like, they don't change the way you
if
want
they don't change at all, right? Because it's very common. Almost everybody thinks they're going to change their spouse. But girls for sure know they can change him. They know it, right? Just a little time with him and he's going to be so different. He'll brush his teeth carefully. He's going to put the toilet seat down. He's going to keep the kitchen clean. He'll be like, right? All you need is just like, you just have to point out those few little flaws and right away, you know, he is going to be fabulous. So it turns out that sometimes people stay the same. So you need to marry who he is right now, not who you think he can be. And hopefully he'll grow along with you. But you have to be happy with who he is right now. So if he doesn't change at all, do you still want to marry him? That's an important question. Okay, it's actually close to 7 o'clock. So let's just open it up for some questions. But that's the main thing that I want to point out, is that you're not dating for fun and you're not dating for marriage. You're dating for a fabulous marriage. If you're dating for a fabulous marriage, you need to identify your core values, make sure they match up with his, and ask a bunch of these questions. Get tatlistic.
I think that a lot of dating nowadays, they don't get a lot of communication and everything because it depends on the dating they have. Mm-hmm. They go to movies, they go to watch something, they go to the bowling. So they don't talk so much. So the communication and everything has to be like in a date only talking. I don't know what.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. And so if you're dating in that way where you're going to movies or you're hanging out or you're going with friends, make sure there's talking time too. A movie and ice cream. For for an hour, right? Where you're talking, you could talk about the movie. And actually that's a very good way sometimes to talk about different values. What did you think about the way they ran their household? I would never do that. Can you imagine that dad left before he whatever? I would never want to have a father in a house that does that. What do you think? Right? It's a great way to make sure. You don't have to sit with your list of questions and grill them. But it's a great way. Go see a romantic comedy and then talk about, did you like that or didn't you like that? What did you like about it? You hope things will be like that. You hope things won't be like that. But you must talk. There's no substitution for that. And texting is not talking. Texting is a way to communicate, but it's not talking. It is not a conversation. One good thing about texting is you practice talking without interrupting. Because you can't interrupt a text. Right? I have a deaf person on my block, and there's a special way to call deaf people. A special number. I don't know if they have something like that in Mexico. But you basically call a hearing person, talk to them, they type it over the phone, and the deaf person reads it. The deaf person types back, this is before computers, but they still use it today for old people who don't know how to use computers. They type it back, the person reads it to you, right? So you can't interrupt. It's a conversation where you have to listen to the whole thing because they read it to you and then they say, go ahead. And then you can say your thing. And then you can say, go ahead. Right? And you have, it takes a long time to have a conversation about how much. But it really is a practice in not interrupting.
Question. Okay, I've dated some guys that do share my values and do share my goals, and maybe we share interests, but there's no way I can picture myself with them.
Then that's not something, right? So then that's a skip.
That's a skip.
Yep, that's a skip because there's no chemistry there. There needs to be chemistry.
There needs to be the first date.
Absolutely. There does not have to be chemistry on the first date. No. There does not. Chemistry can develop. So if you find, let's say you're being matched with somebody, you're going on a shit-up date type of a thing, or somebody's recommending, I know this guy, I think you guys would be great together, and your first date is a bomb. You don't like him at all. Go out again.
Go out again. But people always tell me, no way, that doesn't come now. It will come to you, but I can go along 2 months dating the person because he's very nice, we have nice conversation.
If you went for 2 months and you didn't feel anything, that's a skip.
No, I can go, but... Maybe they can. So I also have to consider them because
yes.
Sometimes I go out today and I say, well, no thank you, and they get, why, it's too soon.
Right.
But maybe they will get
you may want to consider three and just say from the outset, I mean, today I personally recommend three.
Dates?
Three dates before you say no. Not 3 dates before you say yes.
Okay.
3 dates before you say no.
Okay.
Because you can't really tell the first date, you can't really tell. And the second date, you don't really know, if you see things, right, he's not him, and you're not you. You want to have a little bit of a chance to have their personality come out, to relax a little bit. And if it is a date that's been matched, so you have already checked out some of the goals and values, although you need to have those conversations too, the two of you, you do.
And how important is to respect your values?
Extremely important to respect your values.
Like not to give up to what you do.
You, if you give up one of your core values to marry somebody, a piece of you will be missing.
But what if everything else works out, like in my case, except religion? That I've dated guys right. that are not religious, but they say, I respect you, and maybe you can teach me. And I also have like the crazy idea that I can change them, because everybody in my family are causing me to love.
Right.
So I said, why not give them a chance?
So that's a very tricky thing. It is risky. It's possible. If the woman is the religious one and the man is not, and he's very tolerant, very patient, and very open, it's possible that it could work. But it's not going to be easy. It means you carry the whole load yourself. He's tripping over Kiddush. He doesn't know how to make a Seder. He can't do homework with the kids. Those are big deals. You know, who's washing with them Negel Vasser in the morning if you're not there? Who knows how important it is? Who's helping them make a bracha? Who's married to the religion and who's not? Right? So somebody who's warm and tolerant, that's nice, but religion is a huge area. So you have to decide how important it is to you. If one of your core values, let's say, is hospitality, you love having guests. Really important to you. You really think you should. But he's really private. That's an area where you probably could work it out. And say, okay, you know, we'll have guests once a month, once a quarter, once a year. I get it. It's a big stress for you. I could live without it, even though it's really important for me. I came from a big guesty home, and I feel like I should have lots of guests. But religion is so huge, you really have to think very, very carefully before you give up big pieces of that. So even if he's very tolerant, think about how much you need partners in creating a Jewish home. So can he be a partner?
They would be willing to get into it. Like it happened to me. I got married a year ago, and I dated like for two years before I got married. And my boyfriend, he wanted to. He was willing to sit and take a class, and then we started to take classes every week. And then he made changes. If I wouldn't see that, he would make changes. I wouldn't need it
right
with him.
Right.
I needed to see the changes that he was going to make. Otherwise, I wouldn't take the risk. Because you don't know.
Right. So I think that's something to think about. Like, are they actually, is it just because of you? He's willing? Or can you ignite a spark where he's interested?
You can motivate him from the start.
If you can motivate him on his journey and the journey becomes his, that's fine. But if you're schlepping him along on your journey and he's just a willing person being dragged, he's willing to be dragged on your Jewish program, it's very hard. Very, very hard.
And sometimes they even lie to you.
Yeah.
Because
they're infatuated, right.
Yes,
they're dating an image.
They eat meat when you're not with them, and that's not good.
Right. So that's something to really seriously look into very carefully. That's an area that's very hard. I mean, you'll pay for it in some way or another. Mm-hmm. So you have to decide if you're willing to pay that price.
I wanted to hear the New York Times article
that you did. Yeah, I have to look it up. I really just read a summary of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I do want to look it up. I'll try to post it on my website. I have a website. It's called abiteoftorah.com. B-I-T-E, not B-Y-T-E. A Bite of Torah. And I have a resources tab where I try to list books. I'm just still building it, so it's not complete. Mm-hmm. But where I'm trying to list books that I mentioned, articles that I mentioned, so people can look it up if they don't remember what the title was, or if I misquoted the title. Then I could, you'll find it there.
Okay.
So hopefully I'll take care of that by next week.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, sure. Any other questions?
What can you know that you are the one that's not right? I mean, like, it's not them, it's really you.
Well, you might know that you have flaws, but it can't be really you that's not right because you're you. So all you have to do is find the right match for you.
So there's no wrong me, just...
There's no wrong you. There may be parts of you that you want to work on, for sure. You may have flaws or faults that you feel like you should work on. Maybe you're short-tempered. Maybe you spend too much. Maybe you eat too much. Maybe you exercise too much. Who knows what it is, right? Maybe you're not respectful enough. Whatever it is. So you may have faults that you want to work on, but that is who you are. You need to know who you are and be honest about who you are. That's who you are. You need to find somebody that works with who you are, not with who you wish you were, with who you actually are. That's what I mean by know your own faults. Mm-hmm. You know, don't fake around and say, I'm really the whatever type, and then find somebody for your image. If that's not who you are, it's not who you are. So it's fine. It's not that you're the wrong one. It's always him that's the wrong one, because it has to be one that matches you,
okay.
Right? So you just have to be real with who you are and make sure that you get a match that works for you. Any other questions? Great, I want to give you all a bracha. Those of you who are married, you should have a fabulous marriage. And those of you who aren't yet married, you should find somebody and create a fabulous marriage that will be a light for you, a light for your marriage, a light for your family, a light for your community, and a light for all of Klal Yisrael. Okay, sure.
Thank you.